Joining us now are the gurus of How To, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. Actually, that's what you get paid to be, right?
Right. That's where, well, I get paid to be. I get to live in other places, too.
Yeah. I just come for the fun.
But we have the U-Bells as guests on our show on a regular basis and always look forward to their visits because we get a chance to talk about all sorts of things that we don't normally talk about in our life, but that are really important to us.
Yeah, whatever we don't know about, we'll talk about.
Okay, and we invite our listeners to call us at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org, or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And probably a lot of people are going to want to talk about preparing for summer, but we cover a wide range of topics here.
Well, summer is a difficult time of the year, like every other part of the year is difficult. Either it's too cold or it's too hot. Nobody's ever very happy, but there are equipment and techniques that people could utilize that could make them feel more comfortable. Mostly that they have to understand how their body feels cold or warm and why. That's how air conditioning and heating systems are designed, about the human element on what it's able to function at and be comfortable and be efficient.
But the thing about air conditioning is that also the choices that we make of the equipment that we get and the placement of the equipment, it's kind of important. Now, a lot of people who live in apartments have very little flexibility of which windows they can put their air conditioning in. Especially, like, if your window opens onto a fire escape, that's illegal. You can't put a window in a fire escape
window.
Now
you tell me.
Yeah. In a fire escape window for two reasons. One, how do you get out if there's a fire? And number two, it obstructs the fireplace for other people. But if you do have that option, you should actually see which of the windows gets little or no sunlight, and that's the window you want to put it in, because the cooler the air conditioner is on the outside, the more heat exchange you'll get.
Is it more efficient if it goes into an air conditioning sleeve?
Well, it's better for the building because you get less air leakage from the outside through the windows, because windows were not designed to have air conditioners in them. So, yes, if you have a sleeve, that would be the best. And if you actually own the space and you want to put in a split system or a ductless split system, people know them as the Mitsubishis, but many other brands make them. Those are the best because you're actually taking the compressor and you can put it almost anywhere you have availability. And it reduces the sound noise, the sound level in the apartment.
Does central heating, central cooling, is that turn out to be less expensive than running air conditioners?
That's a difficult question. It depends upon how it is situated, whether you have the equipment, whatever it is, on the north side or the south side, or the east side, or the west side, because if it's a combination heating and air conditioning unit, in the winter time, if it is on the sunny side, it'll be more efficient. In the summer, it won't be. If it's on the north side, then it's less efficient for the heating system, but more efficient for the air conditioning. It's very technical.
Sounds to me like you can't win.
Yeah, and the other thing about trying to have combination heating and air conditioning is everything you do for heating, you do 180 degrees opposite for cooling.
Yes.
So you want to heat from down low, but you want to air condition from up high. You want to heat from the perimeter of the building, but you want to air condition from the core of the building. So everything you do is a compromise, and that's why we really encourage people to have complete separate systems. The one thing I do want to touch upon is, because summer is coming, so is humidity. From what I'm listening to the radio this morning, tomorrow is going to be like a wet rag. And so the thing that makes buildings really unhealthy is too much humidity, and most of that humidity comes from the basement. The problem is people don't like running dehumidifiers because they cost money to run, but they do make the building healthier. And a lot of times you come into a house and it smells like mold. Well, where's that coming from? It's coming from the basement. So if you have a dehumidifier, run it. And if you don't have one, buy one and put it in, because if your house smells like mold, chances are you probably have a mold problem.
Yeah, with that humidity, that is critical. The humidity is critical in the summertime, because if you have a low humidity, the perspiration on your body evaporates more quickly. When you in physics, if you take a liquid and turn it into a gas, it needs heat energy to do that, and it extracts it from your body, and voila, you feel cooler, and that's how it works.
Before we go to the
phone. Don't you love when my dad speaks French?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
What do you mean, cooler? I'm going to get in trouble here. Before we take calls, by the way, our number again is 212-433-9692. There, you always bring in a quiz. And should I read it this time?
Why not?
Because it looks simple. It's easy for me to read. In this great world of machines, name the pivoting stop bar or lever whose free end engages into a tooth revolving wheel to prevent it from turning backwards. Okay, if you know the answer, give us a call at 212-433-9692. Don't write to our show page with an answer. You got to call us. But you can write in questions for the U-Bells.
I'm going to say, because I am a cyclist, this is a major part of the rear wheel mechanism on a 10-speed or any bicycle for that matter.
Which reminds me that you'll be participating in
I did.
Oh, you did it?
Yes. Yeah, tell them about that. That's interesting.
It was great. We had 239 riders. We raised a collective $1.7 million for the Cancer Research Institute, which does immunotherapy research. And we each rode 150 miles over 2 days, 75 miles each day. So a lot of climbing, a lot of mountains, but we all had a great time. Wonderful people. And I'm probably going to do it again, so I will be begging again next year.
Okay. And congratulations in order to you, Alvin, because you and Estelle are going to be celebrating your 60th anniversary, your wedding anniversary?
I can't believe it. You know, the funny part about being married 60 years, I'm living with a woman that is really a stranger longer than I lived with my mother. You know, that is such a crazy thing. And also,
she's still a stranger, Al.
No, she's not. But you know what it is. She's not a relative. and the thing is, I remember the wedding vividly. That's the amazing part.
And I am one of the wonderful products of these two strangers meeting one another.
Well, he came along in that 60 year period
with my brother and sister, by the way.
Let's take some calls. Joe from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And I'm preparing this for the winter, and in this, I'm trying to figure out what is the best heating system and least expensive to run. I'm considering the usual steam heating system, a hydronic system, and of course the heat pumps. Mm-hmm. Can you advise me as to, as I said, the most efficient and least expensive
for me?
Already thinking that far in advance.
That's wonderful, because now's the time to start thinking heating. In the wintertime is the time you start thinking about air conditioning, because the service people are all busy during the times of years that you need that. But for me personally, I am a hydronic person. I love circulated hot water because it's cooler heat. I know that's an oxymoron, but it doesn't dry the air out as much in the wintertime, which we already have low humidity in the wintertime anyway. And the other thing I like is the high-efficiency condensing modulating boilers, gas boilers. And you will get the most efficiency out of it. My feeling is to heat with electricity in New York seems to be a little – electricity is not the cheapest way to heat in New York City. And as far as gas is concerned, right now it's at an all-time low. So we're actually – and with the more exploration they're doing, those prices are going to drop. How you feel about fracking, I'm not going to get into that political discussion right now. But the reality is that my price of gas went from $1.20 1 year a therm down to $1.10 a therm, and that's a drop. And I don't see anything dropping these days. So the high efficiency – now, as far as how you're going to heat it, whether you use radiators, baseboard radiators, or radiant floor heating – that's entirely up to you and that's up to design decisions. I wouldn't put in a steam system, because the most efficiency you can get with a steam system is between 80 and 85%, because no one's putting real R&D into residential heating systems, because it's a shrinking market. And as far as forced air, it dries the air out, and you lose about 30% of your heat through leaks in the ductwork.
The other thing is that the hydronic hot water circulating system is probably the quietest. And also, it's the most private, because with a duct system, the children can hear you talking to your wife in another room, because the ducts act like almost like a telephone connection between each and every room.
That's why you should whisper. Okay, Joe?
So, one more question about now the radiators. I have the old steam radiators. Should I keep those?
You can retrofit those if they're large enough, which they should be, to hot water, but you have to make sure you clean them out and get all the corrosion out of them.
The gook out of it.
And make sure when the hot water system is put in that they put in a strainer in the system to collect the dirt. Okay, that's important also. You should do a lot of research about this and read and look at all the stuff. Slanfin is a local company. They have a lot of good information on their website.
Thank you for your call. Linda from Asbury Park. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my question is about attics because I don't understand thermodynamics or whatever you call it for why an attic functions and for holding, I keep reading, it holds a mass of slow-moving hot air. Why do I want that? Why shouldn't I just get rid of my attic, which seems to only collect squirrels, and just insulate my roof and, you know, make an open rafter system?
Well, the attic generally is really for on the outside of a building. It makes the building more aesthetically acceptable, but the attic does have a very great function, particularly in the summertime when the heat pounds down on a rooftop. There is a airspace between the actual envelope of the roof and the actual livable space, and that envelope actually dissipates the heat from directly coming down onto your building. On a flat roof building like apartment houses have, the top floor is almost like it's sitting in an oven and the burners are on top of it, so that's why an attic does have a benefit. But I
always thought it was to put old papers and mattresses in.
That's true too, but that's dangerous also because you want to avoid the possibility of a spontaneous combustion. You don't want anything in the attic that has a flame spread ratio of any type. So that's another thing. But when you want to insulate the attic, insulate the floor of the attic, not between the rafters.
But the other thing I want to say is you were saying how much warm air there is inside there. You really should, there's actually supposed to be a certain amount of changes of air per minute, and there should be vents along the soffits to get air in, and there should be vents along the ridge or the top of the roof to get the air out. And if it's functioning properly, it shouldn't be as hot. But like my father said, it does act as a, even though it's warm in there, it does act as a cushion, because if that space is only 18 inches high, that space gets way hotter, and it will pound the heat down into the top floor. So you do want to keep your attic.
Thank you so much.
And as far as getting rid of the squirrels, wherever you find the squirrels are getting in, try using that expanding foam called Great Stuff. For some reason, anything else you put in the hole, the squirrels will eat through. Somehow that leaves a really bad taste in their mouth, and they don't eat through it. So I found it to be very effective in my attic, because I had squirrels too, but I certainly wasn't chopping off my attic, because that's actually where that's actually where my master bedroom is, so that would be kind of rough. Anyway.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Now, a number of people have been calling in with answers, possible answers, to the quiz. You want to
read
it one more time?
Yeah. In this great world of machines, name the pivoting stop bar or lever whose free end engages into a toothed revolving wheel to prevent it from turning backwards.
Okay, let's go to Mario from Queens. What do you say, Mario?
A locking ratchet?
No, that's not it.
Sorry.
Actually, that is the whole device, but it's not what we're looking for.
Yes.
We're looking for the pivoting stop bar or lever.
Peter from Manhattan.
A socket wrench.
No, but this is in a socket wrench. This is part of the socket wrench. Go on. Next.
John from Union, New Jersey.
Escapement.
No, this actually describes what's going on there, but it's not the piece we're looking for.
Okay. David from Manhattan.
Is it a pole? P-A-W-L.
Now, how did you come up with that appalling answer?
Yeah.
Oh, you are rehearsing that.
No.
Just comes out, unfortunately.
So why do you know this?
Oh, guys like machines, and I, among other things, I play with old watches, so that's where I see both escapements, as the other gentleman said, and the funny little bar that you see when you open up the back of a watch.
And because you actually have to buy these pieces when you're fixing them by actual name.
Oh, believe me, I don't fix the watches. So I have people for that.
Okay.
Okay. So, what does he get for getting?
Tinker with what you can tinker with if you don't know how to fix watches.
What does David get for coming up with the right answer?
He gets a copy of
Save Money.
Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis. We will send it to you. One of our interns will take your name, address, and location, and we'll send you the book by mail.
So don't hang up, David. They're going to talk to you.
Thanks.
But well done.
And we are going to go to a little break and come back with more of your calls and also the other things that you can do. You can write in on our show page at WMIC.org or write to us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is @LeonardLopate. We have the gurus of how to here with us. Remember that number, 212-433-9692. Lunch is sometimes the only break in your day and probably the only time you'll eat until dinner. It can be one of the day's highlights, but it can also be unhealthy and expensive. The Leonard Lopate Show wants to make your lunch better, so join us by signing up for our newsletter at wnyc.org/lunch. We'll send you recipes and tips, and then, starting June 22nd, join our challenge. Bring your lunch from home every day that week and share your stories and pictures with us. We may even invite you on the show to talk about it. So let's hack our lunch together. Sign up now at wnyc.org/lunch. And today on Fresh Air, the new animated Disney Pixar film Inside Out, which is all about what goes on inside the mind of a child, where joy, fear, anger, sadness, and disgust are at the controls. Today on Fresh Air, Terry Gross talks with Peter Docter, who directed Inside Out, as well as Monsters Incorporated and Up. That's today at 2 on 93.9 FM. And we are back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, also known as Hackett Building Inspectors, Brooklyn, New York. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. And Vic Livingston asks on Twitter, should basement casement windows be kept open to maintain cross breezes?
That's an interesting question, because it really does have to do with what kind of day it is and humidity-wise. If it's a dry day like today, it would be a good idea to open it up. But if it's tomorrow, the problem is when you bring warm, moist air into a basement, it then condensates on everything because relative humidity is proportional to the level of heat in the room. So if, let's say, the outside air is 85 or 90, I think it's supposed to go up to tomorrow, and we have a humidity level of 85, 90%, or let's just say 85%, and you bring it into a basement that's now 70 degrees, all that moisture is going to leave the air and start condensating on the mechanical equipment. The wood could cause rotting and mold. It could start screwing up some of the other equipment down there. So no, you really do have to keep a balance, and you have to monitor. It's almost like people who are adjusting heating systems for big buildings. You just don't set it and forget it. You have to constantly tinker with it.
So you're suggesting a dehumidifier rather than opening the windows?
Yes,
and also,
I do.
Also,
I
thing,
do.
The foundation itself is going to be cold. The foundation is being sheltered by the earth on the outside, and it's not touched by the air and anything else. And that is like having a glass of ice water on a table, and it's nice and warm. But yet around the glass, it gets wet on the table because mm-hmm. that's condensation coming on that is condensing on the glass itself. And the same thing happens on the foundation, and you want to avoid that.
Let's take another call, Marianne from the East Village. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi. My question is, I have a little outbuilding, a tool shed, and the roof caved in, and now I went up to the spring, and there's all kinds of black mold. So now I'm imagining that I'm getting all kinds of diseases from the black mold. Is it safe to work in there? Is it safe to use equipment, tools that's in there?
Well, what did you do with the roof? Is the roof still collapsed?
Yes, it is.
Well, I would kind of say, yes, it's dangerous in there for a number of reasons. One, stuff is going to be falling on you from this collapsed roof. And though I am not a hair on fire kind of person when it comes to mold, I don't really stick myself in environments where there's lots of it. I think that probably the thing you want to do is fix the roof first. And as far as the mold is concerned, it probably happened because A, there's not enough ventilation in that shed, but also because the roof was probably leaking.
Can you wash the mold with ammonia?
Well, oh, that's an interesting question. Thanks for bringing that up. And actually, most people use bleach.
Yeah, or a combination.
Yeah, well, you don't want to mix them both together. Then you get an explosion. So, right. No, don't mix bleach
and
ammonia.
Well, the mold wouldn't like an explosion.
Well, neither will you. Actually, the gases that come from mixing bleach and ammonia can...
We're going to knock you out.
Kill you.
Kill you right off the bat.
Don't do that.
Okay, but here's the thing.
Makes your lung cells collapse.
But here's the thing about cleaning mold. To clean the mold initially, if you have a lot of mold, you can use bleach. But the funny thing is that bleach actually shocks the mold and makes it grow more. So you really, if you have a mold problem, you want to wash with a neutral soap. And neutral soaps are any soap that doesn't have bleach in it, like even dishwashing detergent or clothes detergent or just hand soap.
Now, Al, I remember years ago you suggested that you could also paint over mold with a metallic paint, and that would pretty
much... That's when the mold is gumming through, and you want to seal it in. If you could, there's three things that take place to grow mold. You need the mold spores to begin with. You need moisture. You need the right temperature, and you also need the correct relative humidity together with nutrient.
You need food. It's four things.
You need a nutrient. And so when you take something like aluminum paint and put it on top of something that has mold on it, and you're sealing off all of these things that make it grow, it actually goes into dormancy behind it, and it doesn't grow anymore. But it can
be. It's still there.
It'll always be there.
But I want to say one other thing, that mold... having mold is not the problem. It's the symptom of the problem. The problem is uncontrolled moisture. So if you have mold anywhere in a house, it's not. Don't just deal with the mold. You have to deal with the underlying issue.
We're back to that dehumidifier.
Thank you.
Okay.
But on a safe, two safety issues, two things. In the news, the findings of the gas explosion up in Harlem and how that all the things that happened to make that, they're saying it might be the sewer might have broken and undermined the soil and the gas pipe leaked. So everyone's involved. The National Transportation Board, that's it. One of the things I put in my house is that people could put in their homes, if they're worried about gas leaks, are gas detectors. And you could put that in as a standalone or part of a central station alarm system. And the second thing is grab bars in your bathrooms. They're like seat belts. You don't like them. They're ugly, and you don't want to have to use them. But, God, when you're slipping and you need one, you might want to have one in your bathroom, especially in your shower or bathtub.
Yeah, the statistics show that the most dangerous place in a home is the bathroom. And only about 12 or 13%, less than 12 or 13% of the people who have bathrooms have grab bars, not only inside the bathroom, but they need one outside so that when they're stepping over the bathtub and be on the wet bathroom floor, they have some sort of stability so they wouldn't fall down.
People usually assume that that's not necessary until you pass a certain age.
Well, no,
and that happens in a flash, and you only know it happened once you've fallen down and you can't get up.
Yes, and it is treacherous. Yes.
Now, another listener points out you don't want to put a dehumidifier in a bathroom where mold is most likely to occur.
No, because you actually need to. The thing with bathrooms is two things. One, you should have a ceiling vent in your bathroom or a window. Unfortunately, no one opens windows, but definitely after you're done with the bathroom, you should open the door and let the moisture throughout the space kind of equalize. And if you take, the typical 20 minute shower, you're not putting in that much moisture. But if there is a problem there, no, dehumidifier in the bathroom won't work.
Meg from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm really excited that I have a question today.
Okay, what is it?
You've been waiting to have a question.
I have. Whenever I listen to these guys, I want to call.
You want to be part of it.
I do.
Okay.
So my question is, I'm putting a loom down in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it on the basement floor for, moisture reasons. We do have a dehumidifier that runs.
Great.
That's tied directly into our output pipe, so we don't have to empty it.
Yep. All good things.
What I'm worried about is if the basement floods or even just gets, like an inch of water, I want to have my loom above ground.
So why don't you just go to some local... either supply place or whatever, and just get a bunch of pallets and then on top of the pallets, put yourself like a half-inch plywood, and then put everything on top of that. So now you're at least 4 inches off the floor.
That's the plan. The question is, can I do the entire room? Because we want to be able to get the water off the floor.
Well,
if it does manage to flood.
Well, you do. Do you have a sump pump in that basement?
I don't believe so.
You might want to cut a hole in the concrete floor, an 2-foot by 2-foot hole that's at least a foot and a half deep, and then cover the bottom with gravel, and then put a sump pump in there. That when you do get a flood, at least the water will collect in there, and you could start pumping it out from that point. I don't know if I would cover the whole basement in those pallets, but at least enough for a workspace, because then if you have to remove it, taking it apart could be a problem also.
A listener asks, when I start up my central air conditioning, I feel it collects water that may spawn mosquitoes. How do I deal with that?
Well, the thing is that all air conditionings produce water from the condensation that it creates when the air goes through the evaporator coil. And what you got to do is you got to make sure that the air conditioning is pitched properly and that the drain is not clogged. And once in a while, it wouldn't be bad wherever the water collects inside the trough is to use a little bit of bleach so that it keeps any kind of growth to a bare minimum.
I also want to say that when you start up your air conditioner, you get that musty, stale odor every time, not just the first time, but every time you start it up. That's telling me that the air conditioner is not draining properly and it's not pitched properly and the water is just sitting there, because one has to realize that water coming out of an air conditioner is about the dirtiest water there is in your house other than what comes out of your toilet.
Because it's filtering everything in the air.
Yeah, it's condensating everything in the air. The mold spores, the dust, our skin, everything is in that air. So
let's take another call about air conditioning. This one is from Dennis in Brooklyn. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
What's up, Dennis?
You should turn off the radio, Dennis.
And he's not listening.
Okay.
Sorry, Dennis.
Goodbye.
Well, Dennis wanted to know whether you should clean your air conditioner every year.
Yes. Easy. Okay. That was an easy question.
Let us go to Wade from Harboro, Pennsylvania. Hi.
On your head.
Hi, Wade.
Hello, gentlemen. I recently had to have a roof put on, and it came suddenly. I have many sleepless nights to trying to decide between dark versus light color. Conventional shingles, notwithstanding cool roof shingles. They haven't been used in our area for years, apparently. 60 days delivery, if I had decided.
Yeah.
I live in a Cape Cod, which means I don't have a dead space attic.
Right.
One research paper said only 10 degrees cooler in a dead space attic. They shouldn't have made that judgment. It's not scientific.
Right.
interestingly, the cool roof shingles say up to 10 degrees cooler than, right, marketing people, you know.
Right. So what's the question?
So should I have gone dark or light in general for conventional shingles with living space, if you can call it up there, in a Cape Cod?
Light colored shingles, white or even pink or something that reflects light, will give you longevity to the shingles themselves.
Exactly.
What happens is when you have dark materials, seem to deteriorate at an accelerated rate over things that are light.
Well, it's absorbing the heat, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Absorbing the
light. But I'm also going to say something that is scientific, because I do go around from building to building, and I actually have an infrared heat gun that I check this from time to time.
Uh-huh.
And on a day that's like 80 or 90 degrees, the difference between a black roof and a white roof is between 40 and 50 degrees. So however that translates into the space on the inside, it's 40 to 50 degrees difference. It is really hot on. And I have to tell you, you don't have to be scientific. Just walk from concrete to asphalt in your bare feet and tell me which one you can walk on and which you can't. And that'll tell you everything you need to know. I'm a light roof kind of guy. Black is not a good color for roof. It looks great for tuxedos, not so good for roofs. That's just it.
Okay. Rob from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. I love how much we're dealing with these extremes, humidity and dryness.
Rob, do you have a tuxedo? Would you wear a white tuxedo or a black tuxedo?
No, I'm going to fix my watch now also.
So what's your question?
We have a dehumidifier in the basement, and I believe that when it runs, it seems to be adding some sort of a smell. And is there some way to mitigate what a dehumidifier does? We don't have an outlet to it, so we have to empty a drawer.
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you changed the filter in the thing?
What's that?
Have you cleaned? Have
Is
you
there
cleaned,
a filter?
Have
in
you
that?
Cleaned the filter in the dehumidifier?
Oh gosh! Oh, now you're making fun of me. Okay.
Call me next month. Call us in 2 months and let me know how this works out. Okay. Really? That's
so,
bottom line.
Is this a problem with dehumidifiers? Is it something that needs to be dealt with on a regular basis?
Well, yeah. If you use it a lot, mine's on a lot. I clean mine out probably every 2 or 3 months during the heating season.
It's pretty much
during
the cooling season. Same as an air conditioner.
It's exactly like an air conditioner. You got to clean it. You got to change the filter.
That's like that Happy Days. When was the last time you changed? The oil.
If you have the facilities, it's not a bad idea to take the dehumidifier outside and wash it with a hose and clean all the schmutz out of that thing so that it works better.
Now, people who could not get on sometimes try to contact you.
Yeah, they should try. They should give it an attempt. I don't make me feel horribly guilty if I don't get back to you immediately. I try.
Provide a phone number.
Provide a phone number and email me at larryubell@gmail.com. That's larryubell, one word, @gmail.com.
And thank you both so much for being on our show.
It is great. And we'll be back again in 2 months where we all, again, show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.